Bonjour à toutes, à tous. Je suis heureuse d'être avec vous ici. Je m'appelle Véronique Mikilob, je suis la présidente de UK IPv6 Council. Mais maintenant, je vais switcher en anglais parce que je ne suis pas vraiment habituée de présenter en français. Et alors, I think we've got a little bit more time that it is in the schedule, which is good because when I put together my presentation, I was wondering like 15 minutes is almost impossible. But anyway, let's get started. So when we briefly talked with Vivian about what should I cover, I said, well, let's talk about enterprise because obviously that is the next big thing that needs to happen for IPv6 so we actually move forward. But at the same time, then I noticed the announcement on LinkedIn and I was supposed to give an update on the UK IPv6 Council. So here we go. I will have first part of my presentation talking about how UK moved from basically zero to where we are today. And then we'll focus really on enterprise and my observations that I've seen over the years. A few words about myself for those who don't know me. I'm a network engineer by education and trade. After obtaining Master of Science in Computer Science in 2006, I was for 10 years with Cisco as a consulting systems engineer eventually. And during the time, I also picked up IPv6, presented at Cisco Live, which is a big customer conference in Europe and US. And I think at some point, somebody told Latif that maybe we should work together and to get things started in the UK because UK was not moving really in anywhere with IPv6. So then after 2016, I worked as a network architect for Microsoft IT, where I was responsible for IPv6 only project for the global network. UK IPv6 Council, we started in 2014 after a brief dialogue with Latif and Peter Gerstein at then a big conference, V6 World Congress, which was happening at the time in Paris for a couple of years. While I wasn't really sure how to go about this, I like the British attitude, we just get on with things and get things done. So Latif put me in touch with some highly capable people. You might recognize the name Tim Chown, who for a long time was my co-chair. He's author of many IPv6 related RFCs. And so together with some other people from large operators, we put together a small group who started to organize events. But at first we said, what is our goal? What do we want to achieve? At the time, there was really no community, no group of people who would be sharing their experience with IPv6. There would be networking conferences, but there was never enough time to cover work that was actually going on about V6, and mostly it was about shaming the other people that they are not deploying IPv6. So we took a different approach, rather positive, and we decided the council is going to be a little bit different. We want people to talk and to enable different groups to deploy IPv6 with confidence. We work in a very simple way. We've got one big annual conference. It's a day-long event, usually towards the end of the year. So the last one happened at the end of November 2025. We've had an annual meeting every year, even during pandemic that we moved online. Then in order to support small discussion, where people can talk more freely and those discussions are not recorded, not published, we have roundtables 2 to 3 year. Actually, today there's one happening in Manchester, but I was asked by Latif first to come here to Paris, so you've got priority. Then also during the first years, we noticed that the conference, day conference, is not actually enough to go really deep into a certain topic. So as you can see behind me, we have organized so far 5 themed workshops, which were focusing specifically on first the topic applications and IPv6, because already in 2016, people started to say the transition from dual stack to V6 only is not a problem for the network, it's going to be a problem for applications. And I think it's true even now, 10 years on, but we'll talk about it later. Security was our biggest attended workshop that we ever had. It was over 140 attendees at the time. And then we continued. Enterprise, I think maybe in a year or two, there'll be a time to do another enterprise day because that's where we need things to move forward. And and things change a lot as well. Everything we do is for free, which some people can't understand, but we totally rely on our hosts to provide us with space and with facilities to host these meetings. So where was the UK in 2014? Like, you probably can't even see the number, how small it is, you know. So we are less than 0.2%. At the time, I just would like to remind you that France was, again, the envy of the world, because thanks to Free and the 6RE deployment in the broadband network, you were at 5%, you know. And I was like, wow, how is that even possible, right? Well, in the UK, we had some small alternative service providers who were deploying IPv6, but not much, you know, not others. So at the time, I worked as a system engineer with Sky, who is the second largest ISP in the UK, and I knew they were working on their IPv6 deployment. So when Latif approached me, I said, well, it's not that hopeless, you know, things will start to change. The numbers that you see for today from last week, January 2026, basically we are over 50% from the Google perspective. I think maybe like 54, but you know, the measurements are different depending on who is measuring what. So even APNIC are finally showing that the UK has climbed just over 50%. Well, we are, you know, through the half point. So hopefully things will start progressing a little bit faster. You mentioned, Vivian, and also Madame Klepo at the beginning, that basically the lack of IPv4 is becoming a blocker for entrance into the market. And I think if you look at the graph on the screen, you will see that around 2022, there was a bit of a growth, which in the UK we were surprised by. But at the time, there were lots of small alternative network providers, as we call them, altnets, who were entering the market, and they basically, they had a little bit of IPv4, but not much, right? They managed to scrape somewhere, but they actually had to deploy with IPv6. So their typical deployment would be IPv6 with IPv4 behind CGNAT, right? But that actually pushed UK at the time, where we were thinking, where is the growth going to come from? Because BT and British Telecom and Sky, they already deployed, but we keep on growing at a very slow pace. So we can learn something from you. Anyway, the numbers, that's good, you know, things are progressing, but we've got a couple of big pain points. And we still have large operators that are lagging behind: Virgin Media, large cable operator, and TalkTalk, a broadband operator, and also majority of the mobile operators are not deploying IPv6 yet. They do have test networks, but we are still waiting when they are going to go into production. The other thing is a big problem, and that's not just for like the IPv6 adoption for operators, it's for enterprises. The graduates that UK universities are producing barely know anything about IPv6 or in general networking, right? The courses, there are a few exceptions, like University of Southampton, where IPv6 is taught as the first protocol, and then the students are taught IPv4, but out of the large number of computer science programs, there are very few that are actually teaching IPv6. And as I far know, this is a problem also in Germany and many other countries. So even the enterprises that want to deploy IPv6, when they get these new hires, they actually will have to teach them. So why to bother, you know, why just we don't get on with IPv4? So that's a big problem. And in the UK, the government, there is no regulation. The universities decide what they teach. So we are kind of lacking something where we would entice them to actually care more about IPv6. Also, unfortunately, we don't have any government program, and we don't have any enlightened regulator like RCEP that would actually encourage the market to move to IPv6, as Latif explained. However, let's not, so there are things, you know, there's success, and it wasn't me who deployed IPv6 in these operators. It was the operators that have done all the hard work, right? So I definitely don't take any credit. It's just I helped to build a platform where we can share these experiences, where the community can exchange their experiences. So we have everything published on our website. There are presentations since 2014. Since 2017, we also have a YouTube channel where our presentations are published. And if you are interested in coming into London to our events, join us on our LinkedIn group, because there you will see what's coming next. Okay, so there was the council. but let's have a look at the enterprise and IPv6, because I think there are sometimes everybody's just put into one bag, you know, and like everybody should do this and this is how it works. Well, based on my experience as a sales systems engineer, then as a network architect for a large enterprise, and now I do a bit of consultancy work and also in the council, this is a very multifaceted problem. So I have created four categories. I'm sure you could look at it in many other ways. So where I would like to say where the problem lies. So first one, I call this multidimensional choice, because as an enterprise network engineer, you have to decide what type of deployment you are going to go with. And you wouldn't believe how much discussion is going about this internally in enterprises, unless you are from a large enterprise or a certain size. Because while 10 years ago, the options were dual stack or IPv6 only, all of a sudden, since October 2020, well, realistically, 21, 22, there's another entrant into this game, and that's IPv6 mostly. And you wouldn't believe how this confuses people and the certain, like, which way we're going to go. Of course, they understand dual stack is something which is not here forever because we don't want to operate two networks on the protocol, but IPv6 only seems almost unachievable, I would say. Dual stack is well known. The trouble is that most enterprises, and possibly also operators do at the beginning, they don't test with V6 only. And they don't find out that actually V6 doesn't work on the dual stack. So there, while the protocol, you know, the standards, everything is mature, the implementation of vendors is not. So you can actually, unless you switch off IPv4, you don't know whether IPv6 is working. So testing V6 only, even for dual stack, very important. V6 mostly is now became more achievable thanks to Windows, who announced in November the support of CLUT, you know, which is coming into general availability sometime this year. It's already in private preview. So with CLUT, this is really a device environment. With V6 mostly, because the network remains dual stack and the complexity increases because we need to include NAT64. We need to do something to enable those V4 only devices with CLA to talk to other IPv4 only services. And don't think that the devices on the network are only laptops and your mobile phones. Typical enterprises, which are non-IT enterprises, which manufacturing, you know, being the hospitals, being energy companies, the devices, logistics centers, anything, the devices are not our typical end-user devices. And the question is, like, where is the availability of CLUT and how is this going to work? Yet at the same time, the V6 mostly enables the coexistence of V6-only clients and V4-only clients on the same network. But operationally, it is very complicated. V6 only, we already identified it 10 years ago. It's really an application problem. Networks have been running V6 only for over a decade now. If you ever followed Facebook, Meta, you know, all these large operators or social media operators, that basically if IPv6 only on the network isn't that difficult, but the applications need to be capable of dealing with the fact that there is no V4 availability. CLUT here should help. The other problem is V6 addressing, what they're going to go with. And it depends, you know, how big the enterprises are. So the large ones, global ones, they usually go with provider independent IPv6 prefixes. But the smaller ones, you know, there is actually, it's not really clear whether they should just take what the provider is giving them or they should go and become an LIR or get their own PI space. And I would tell you, and you will not like to hear it, but NAT66 is used for real. And there are reasons like we don't have a good answer for multi-homing, right? And there are other things that actually drive usage of this, but that's the reality. Then the third point here is address assignment method, Slack versus DHCP V6. Unfortunately, usually they end up with a mixed bag, you know, on some network they just do Slack, on some where they want, where they can and they have control over the hosts connecting to the network, they go with DHCP V6. But I would just say whatever was announced by Google Android in September about DHCP V6 PD is not what enterprises want. I'm not going to talk into about this any further. There is a link to my presentation that I did at the council meeting in November. And finally, you have to touch lots of parts and really have a dedicated team that is going to focus on this special project, because at the beginning it can't be just the business as usual, because the engineers need to get experience with V6 and you need to understand your complete environment. And you'll be surprised how often in enterprises they actually don't know what is using their networks, you know. So not everybody has a perfect database of the devices, of users, etc. And unfortunately, that also increases the complexity. Security. The usual mindset, I'm sure this doesn't surprise you at all, is that we don't deploy IPv6, so we are fine, we are safe. Of course, that is absolutely wrong, because when you don't secure even the not deployed IPv6, you are putting yourself in danger. And there are already well documented cases by cybersecurity companies where, for example, rogue array attacks are abused for basically interrupting the devices on the network, injecting, redirecting the traffic to botnet servers, etc. So security is something that we need to change this mindset. The other problem is that while we've got lots of really good IPv6 security standards, be for example the toolbox of FirstOps Security, what I've seen, the vendor implementation isn't fantastic. Often it happens if you try to deploy multiple of these features from the FirstOps Security toolbox, the devices stop working, or you can't deploy them together with other features, you know. So then you have to really pick and choose what you can deploy. And then I'm talking about the large vendors, you know, the big names that everybody knows. But if you have a global enterprise, it's very likely that within the different regions, depending on the business culture there and how budgets are allocated, they might be using much smaller vendors who will deprioritize IPv6 support of certain features. So having like a homogeneous support for a feature that you want is not as easily achievable as you can think. It's not something that you put on presentation and it just happens, right? It's a lot of work, lots of interaction with the vendors, etc. Monitoring tools, security monitoring. Still today, to this day, InfoSec teams are worried that if they allow a deployment of IPv6 on the network, that they will fly blind, that they will not have visibility of the clients of devices that are connecting on IPv6. So these things need to be advanced. And I'm bringing these points here that this is something to have discussion about, something to talk with your suppliers about if you are in such a situation. Other thing is, did you notice that all the security audits and the security standards that we are auditing against, and everybody is so proud to display the badge for them, they never specifically mention IPv6. And the auditors don't understand IPv6, so they don't ask these questions. So you are 50% securely audited. You are secure, right? 50%, because it's only IPv4. The rest, then there's another thing that I'll talk about in a slide, what this actually means. And the question is whether your, not your InfoSec team, but maybe your red team, if the company has such a group, your pen testers or your external pen testers, do they test against IPv6? So again, that just goes to the top, right? Don't think, they should not think that they are secure just because they have not deployed IPv6 on the network, because that's wrong. The third angle that I want to put here is the business political angle, because, and this, like, you all must be familiar with this, the priorities that ITs have, like, how do you get IPv6 on the top, or how you link it to the most important priorities that the IT organization has, right? Do we really understand the dynamic enterprises? I was really surprised, because in my career at Cisco and Microsoft, I worked basically for IT-centric companies, right, where the either the products or the services, everything was focused on IT. But then, as I say, like 98, maybe 99% of the world are non-IT-centric companies. So what they do, because it's not core business, they outsource it to some consulting company, IT services companies. Again, we are at the beginning, you know, when I talked about the graduates who don't have the knowledge of IPv6, but even now, you know, seasoned engineers of my age and older, they don't know IPv6 enough. So why should they encourage their clients to deploy IPv6? Business units, if they have their own budget, they are going to do their own thing, and the central IT can't do much about it, you know. Also, often what happens if the initiative is driven from the bottom up by the engineering organization, they're waiting where the business units are going to ask for IPv6 support. well, that often doesn't happen. So best chance have those who get the support from the top level management, and they get also budget for this project. And that's not an easy thing. And we engineers in general don't like to talk to managers and to accountants about money. So that's what makes it a little bit harder, right? Also, the thing you notice, engineers from these IT organizations, they don't have the luxury of going to the IETF meetings, participating in the debates about RFC and the standards. They don't go to the RIR meetings or here in Europe, RIPE, just because they are not even allowed to go on a training, because their training is not a priority, because it's not the work. They are expected to be up to date on everything, but to get a dedicated budget for travel and for training, it's super hard. So they rely on vendors, what they tell them, and the vendors don't want to always talk about things they don't support that well, right? I would say here, the things, you know, like we did in 2011, 2012, the World 6 Day and World IPv6 launch, they are very important, you know, or like the work that RCEP is doing with the monitoring, and this kind of creates a, like a gentle pressure, because nobody wants to be seen as last. You know, maybe they're comfortable being last for a while, but eventually that's going to change. I think that all really happens. Or cloud, for example, there is an external pressure when cloud large providers started to charge for IPv4. That also kind of changes the dynamic, and all of a sudden people think maybe we should do this IPv6 thing. The thing you notice, because we are in Europe, we are very Europe-centric, and especially in the UK, very US-centric. You realize, like, if it's a global enterprise and does business in Asia the difference, the situation is very different. So there, all of a sudden, the business units and enterprises that have to do business with Asia, they are much more open to deploying IPv6. So we need to understand all these different factors that are coming together that influence that IPv6 project. And I will conclude with this, what I call on and off game. Of course, you have heard about this. As soon as a bug appears, and I've got here a link to the latest Windows bug that happened last summer or 2 summers ago, I think 24 probably, immediate reaction, as soon as there is a problem, switch off IPv6. So while you spend all this time deploying your beautiful dual stack network at the side of the first problem, instead of actually doing the right thing, you know, patching, securing, first thing, just block, remove. Then also, this is actually kind of less fun problem if the enterprises are using so far on-prem solutions, right? And all of a sudden the vendors say, oh, we'll end of life, you know, end of support, you have to move to our cloud solution now. The IPv6 support suddenly disappears for whatever is, you know, not on-prem. So great, you know, we could hear the stories, you know, at the RIPE meetings would be in the V6 working group where they're saying, you know, like, well, we don't want this, you know, we want both what we had before. The other story that I heard recently is zero trust solutions, so, such a popular thing, all of a sudden deprioritizes IPv6, you know, from the list of addresses that the client can use, so IPv4 is on the top, V6 at the bottom will never be used. So you really need to make sure you are monitoring and you know what is running on your network. SD-WAN solutions, another problem, you know, so many enterprises come like, our SD-WAN provider doesn't support IPv6. So like while we are working on dual stacking our offices, we can't actually connect on IPv6 in SD-WAN. Just only recently, I think there was an announcement by Zscaler that they're starting to introduce some IPv6 support, but they're not the only one. There are many SDN providers. So, you know, like it's like, as I said, there are so many environments to touch and deploy. The other thing was mentioned at the last RIPE meeting was that actually the cybersecurity companies and the IT services companies are actively lobbying CIOs of enterprises not to deploy IPv6. And the reason, again, is simple, that they don't have staff that understands the protocol and is capable of supporting their customers. So again, like this comes back to the education, like what we are trying to do. At least that's one thing we are trying to do in the UK with the council, with our meetings, that we are, you know, disseminating information that people need to have and feel confident, and actually that this situation changes. And the question here is, do we need another standard, another RFC, which says, okay, switching off IPv6 is not an option. Deprioritizing IPv6 is not an option. Maybe that's something that's needed. Probably not a law. That would be nice, you know, but how do you do a global law? Anyway, that's something that I wanted to share here with you. And while this all can sound like lots of complaints, and fair enough, these are problems that we are facing, I would look at it, think about where we were 5 years ago and what was discussion 5, 10 years ago. Compared to that, you know, the problems that we are trying to deal with today, we are advancing. So IPv6 is happening, but just kind of it will need a little bit longer. It's more like an ultra marathon, you know. So while we celebrated 30 years last December, I think it's going to still take a while. But all these efforts, the fact that you're here to listen, you know, to share your experiences, that's a very positive thing. And I would like to say thank you and deploy IPv6.